I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Singer-songwriter Sean Amos joins us to play a few songs from his new album. It's called Harlem. We'll also ask him about life with his famous father, Famous Amos, that of the cookie brand. That's a little later. But first, another famous figure who's been all over the news lately. In fact, it's hard to turn on a television or radio without hearing about Charlie Sheen.
Are you clean right now?
Look at me. Duh. Drug tests don't lie.
Are there any drugs in this house?
To my best knowledge, no.
No drugs in the house right
not
now?
Not that I know about. If I know about them, I'll find them and throw them away. It's not a big deal.
You say you've cured yourself
yes.
of addiction. You don't need Alcoholics Anonymous. How have you done that?
I closed my eyes and made it so with the power of my mind.
Charlie Sheen, you heard him here in interviews with NBC News and ABC News, is the star of the television show Two and a Half Men. It airs on CBS, and it is the country's most popular comedy series, even since CBS canceled the remainder of the season after a series of angry appearances by Sheen on various radio and television outlets. Now, it's assumed that Sheen's appearances have been fueled by some substance abuse or mental health issue, but although he has been in rehab before, he has said repeatedly, as you heard here, that this is not an issue for him right now. So why are we talking about this? We're talking about this for several reasons. Recent figures from the federal government suggest that if Sheen is struggling with addiction, he is not alone. Illicit drug use in the U.S. has risen to its highest level in 8 years. That according to the National Survey on Drug Use and Health. And secondly, Sheen's constant presence in the media has raised questions about just how addiction works and what role the kind of attention he is getting plays, not just in his own recovery, but in how the rest of us think about addiction. We decided to call upon two people with both a deep knowledge of the media and of addiction. They are both veteran journalists who've both had their own personal battles with addiction and written powerfully about their experiences. Ruben Castañeda is a reporter at The Washington Post. Patrice Gaines formerly worked at The Washington Post. She's author of Laughing in the Dark, From Colored Girl to Woman of Color, A Journey from Prison to Power. They're both with us now. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
No, thank you again. I want to emphasize that we're not asking you to diagnose Charlie Sheen and his issues, but I am interested in how you feel the whole question of attention plays in this. But before we do that, I did want to ask each of you about your own stories. So, Patrice, why don't you start? Why don't you tell us what happened to you in the summer of 1970 when you were at a Steppenwolf concert?
Well, I got busted and charged with possession of heroin, possession with intent to distribute, and possession of a needle and syringe. I was a heroin user. And I went to jail that summer and ended up spending about 3 weeks in jail. I was very fortunate. I got 5 years probation, which is almost unheard of now. It was just really the beginning of a long journey to stop using.
Did you think you had a problem?
No, absolutely not. And I thought that my problem was not the drugs. I didn't even think about that. I thought, you know, I had all these other problems, and I was just using drugs. No, I didn't think it was serious.
Ruben, let's tell your story. Back in the early 1990s, you were covering the District of Columbia's crack cocaine epidemic for The Post in the time when you also were an addict. Can you tell us a little bit about your story?
Sure. I came to Washington to work for The Post in the fall of 1989. By that time, I had already been using crack cocaine for a year. At that time, the Post did not have any drug tests, so I sailed through the hiring process. And I thought that relocating would be a way to perhaps get my problems behind me, but instead everything just accelerated because there were crack markets all over the place, and I ended up living in an apartment where I was a five-minute drive from any number of crack cocaine markets.
Did you think you had a problem, though?
Only in the last few months before I went away to rehab, which this would be the latter part of 1991, there was one night, it was in September, where I ended up spending about $1,000 worth from nighttime till dawn the following day. And I realized that that was probably not a good thing to do. But it didn't hit me that I was an addict until probably about 2 or 3 weeks before I actually went to the hospital.
I want to ask each of you, and Patrice, I'll ask you to start that. How did you turn it around?
Well, I know in my case, I felt like I was in control as long as I could compartmentalize my life also. You know, I went to work every day. You know, I was a mother. And then I just did drugs. And it's when all those lives start running together and things start crashing that I realized something had to change. And for me, certainly going to jail was a wake-up. But even after that, I think what really did it for me, I chose to go out with a guy who ended up brutally beating me, and I thought I was going to die. That made me stop to really look at my life, which was the beginning. But it was, you know, I mean, I almost died, and I made a decision I really didn't want to die. So for me, what happened was just trying to not do drugs. I didn't go through a formal program. I don't think I even knew about the formal programs, but I went to therapy. It probably took me also longer in a way because I didn't go through a regular program, but I just did things that I knew you had to do, remove myself from certain people. I was on probation. That kind of helped. It was an incentive. But I think also therapy helped me so much.
Ruben, what about you? How did you get from where you were then to where you are now?
Well, it was and is an ongoing process, not a single event. It was 4 days before Christmas, 1991. I walked in for my shift at the Post as the night reporter, and they pretty much hit me with a surprise that they'd made arrangements for me to have a 3-week stay at the rehab unit of Suburban Hospital. And even at that point, I was trying to bargain my way out of it, saying, well, maybe I could try an outpatient program. Do I really have to go away for that long? Because I felt humiliated and frightened that I was being told that my life was that far out of control, which it was. It was almost exactly a month before that where I had the incident where I went to try to buy some crack, and I was yanked into an apartment by a man who was much bigger than me who put a gun to my head. And I managed to talk him into simply robbing me rather than shooting me. Even after that, I didn't think that my problem was bad enough that I needed to seek any kind of help.
Did the rehab take? Did it work?
Well, I would say so. It gave me 3 weeks, which was a good running start. I got out and I did everything I was supposed to, and I felt really good. I was on what some people call a pink cloud, which is where you feel sort of a low-level buzz as your body is detoxifying. And then on the 77th or 78th day, I relapsed. I ran into someone I had used with. She offered me a hit, and I took it. And it was just to this day, I think of it as a miracle that the two locations that I went to continue to use – that night, there was no one out who had anything to sell. And I made it through that night. And the following morning, a heroin addict who frequented my neighborhood, she saw me wandering the street and she asked me what was wrong. And I told her, and she put me back on the right path.
What do you mean?
She told me that she knew exactly what I'd been through. And, you know, one look at her and I knew that she was telling the truth. She had credibility. And rather than inviting me to continue to party with her, which she easily could have. But instead of doing that, she said that she knew, because she had tried to quit drugs and had quit for a while at times, and what I needed to do was just own up to what had happened, go find a support group meeting, raise my hand, and own up to what I'd done and start over. And to this day, I believe that she probably saved me from ending up if I was lucky, I would have ended up in the hospital, but I may not have even made it there.
If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More. We're having a conversation about drug addiction, and we're talking with two veteran journalists who had their own personal battles with drug addiction, and they've written powerful work about it. Ruben Castaneda is a reporter with The Washington Post. Patrice Gaines is a former reporter for The Washington Post. She's the author of Laughing in the Dark, From Color Girl to Woman of Color, A Journey from Prison to Power. Recently, we've had a number of stories like this, not just with Charlie Sheen, but other people who've been struggling with addiction and who have also had those kinds of experiences. For example, we talked to singer El DeBarge this past fall. He was working on a comeback after 16 years out of the music industry, and he was talking about his difficulties battling drug addiction. We can just play a short clip from that conversation.
I picked up a crack pipe because I was curious and I wanted to try it, and it took me 22 years to untry it.
And then after we had that conversation, El DeBarge announced that he was going back into rehab because he said he still had to deal with issues stemming from years of substance abuse. So I wanted to ask each of you, is this common? Patrice, is this common?
Very common. I was going to say seldom is the recovery route straight. You know, you just quit and then that's it. You relapse, you try again, you relapse, you try again, however many times it takes. And, you know, the drug is the result of all the other issues and the way in which you have handled them and allowed them to impact your life. I mean, you're doing the drug as a way of feeling better or escaping something. And those things are complex, and it takes a while to deal with those things. I think that's why, you know, the therapy was so important for me, and I had to kind of create my own support group. But through the therapy, I would uncover, you know, layer after layer of all the baggage I was carrying, the misperceptions I had about myself. And, you know, it's really about what people think about themselves.
Patrice, I know you have some feelings about the coverage of what Charlie Sheen is going through now. And, you know, of course, we have to say, again, he says that he's fine. But his behavior indicates otherwise to many people. At the very least, we know that he's paid a price because he's lost his job at the moment, even though. And I'm just interested in what role you think the media plays in all this.
Well, I think it's time that all of us treat these cases differently. I think anybody who's been watching Charlie Sheen could see that there is something going on with him that does not necessarily need to be just magnified or showcased. I feel like the coverage, in a way, makes a mockery of the seriousness of drug addiction as well as mental illness. You know, there may be some mental illness issues that he's dealing with. And so I think that we have to use, even as members of the media, our judgment on whether or not a person seems stable at times. There's a way to report the story without constantly just letting Charlie Sheen say what he has to say. If we were dealing with somebody else on another issue, just going to interview someone, we make decisions based on, you know, is this person, do they sound rational? Should I quote them? You know, should I ask a family member what's going on? I just think that there is a better way to do this, and that maybe I'm hoping that this case will allow us an opportunity to take a look at how we do it.
Ruben, do you have any thoughts about this?
I think Patrice has touched upon something that she articulated something that I'd been thinking about, which is that this has and has become and is an ongoing spectacle. It's like watching somebody just melt down right there in real time. And it's on the record, though, that he has been in and out of rehab, and he has talked about his own addiction issues. So that's something that's not in dispute. It's something that's progressive. It's not something that is ever cured by any medical procedure, pill, or the strength of one's mind. I can just tell you from my own experience, I had 77 or 78 days clean, and when I relapsed, it wasn't like I was right back where I had left off. It was much, much worse. It was like this: the monster within had grown exponentially. It was like it was now a 15-foot-tall monster with ripped muscles and you know, breathing fire. I just wanted to just use more and more and more. And that's how it is. That's something that the medical professionals and counselors had talked about in rehab is when if one is to stop using, say, for a year and then start again, it wouldn't be as if they picked up where they left off. It would be as if they had been using that entire year and had gotten progressively worse, and that's where they would be.
Well, pulling both of your identities together here, both as a person who has personal experience with this and also being in the media yourself, Ruben, is there something you think, you know, that we should learn from this?
What I'd like to see would be news agencies maybe taking this story as an opportunity to write or report the broader issues surrounding this, such as the fact that there's so many people with addiction and alcoholism issues who have no access to treatment because they do not have insurance, either because they don't have jobs or they have jobs that don't have insurance. And if you don't have insurance, it's almost impossible to get treatment. There are some people I know who fake – I've been told by people who work as in investigators in Maryland, some people will fake suicide attempts so that they can get into a hospital and seek treatment. There have been a number of studies that show that pretty consistently 80% of those who are in prison and jail have alcohol and or addiction issues. So I think there's an opportunity here to take a look at some of these issues and maybe raise questions about, you know, why do we spend so much on incarceration and policing and so little, relatively speaking, on treatment and prevention, which could lead to spending less on the back end.
Okay. Patrice, is there a final thought from you?
I do want to say that I don't think the fact that Charlie Sheen has the most popular show, comedy or show on TV, means that we should just make a spectacle and mockery of his life. And I think that's what we're doing here. And so I don't think that the way we are covering it does anything for any of us. It doesn't say anything good about our society to me. They don't have to do it in a way where we're all just gawking at Charlie Sheen losing his life.
Patrice Gaines, a former journalist for The Washington Post. She is the author of Laughing in the Dark, From Colored Girl to Woman of Color, A Journey from Prison to Power. Now she directs the Brown Angel Center, where she holds workshops for incarcerated women to help them transition back to community life. She was with us from member station WFAE in Charlotte, North Carolina. Also with us, Ruben Castaneda. He's a reporter at The Washington Post. Now he's written a powerful piece about his struggle with addiction. We'll link to it on our site. Just go to npr.org, go to the Programs tab, and then click on Tell Me More. He was with us in our Washington, D.C. studio. Thank you both so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.